You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the podcast network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome to episode 37 of the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, September 17th, 2008. I'm Martin Spriggs.
And I'm Sally Draper.
And we are your weekly hosts for a little show about technology and ministry. And we're glad you joined us, aren't we, Sally?
Yeah, that's right, Martin. Happy to have them with us. Happy to hear from our listeners on a regular basis as well.
Mm-hmm. So what's going on for you?
Oh, we have exciting news in Sleepy Eye. I have in-laws moving to town.
Is that right?
My mother and father-in-law have decided that Sleepy Eye is a nice enough little small town that they want to make it a good retirement home.
Really?
Have they actually been there? They're here right now. They signed a contract on their house this week, and they'll be back to move in by the end of October. So.
No kidding.
Very exciting for us. Okay. It's been a long time since we've been near family. With all the moving around we've done, we've been 2 days' drive away from any of our family. So it'll be nice to have them close by.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. That's exciting for the Draper family then.
Yes, for sure.
All right. Well, it's been interesting in the technology world of late, especially when we're talking about Web 2.0 technologies, which is going to be the subject matter of our conversation this morning, especially when you look at what Google is doing. I don't know if you follow their product line. They launch stuff all the time with their Google Labs, and they kind of incubate them and then throw them out at us. And the latest release was something that they kind of kept under wraps, but I find it to be very intriguing, and that's a new browser called Google Chrome. Have you been following that at all, Sally?
I saw it in the news. It really made the headlines there for a few days. Everybody was excited to see something new from Google. And I guess the big deal with it is that they combine the address bar and the search box into one. So you can either search or type an address in the one box in the top.
Simpler seems to know which one you want to do. And that's kind of cool. And it makes sense. At least it makes sense to me that Google would begin to think along these lines. Most everybody knows that there are probably two main browsers, maybe three if you count Safari, but Internet Explorer, which has Internet Explorer 8 out in beta right now, which is not getting rave reviews because of its rendering engine is not real compatible with a lot of sites yet, but I'm sure they'll fix that. Firefox 3 was recently released, and a lot of people are using that, especially those people that are interested in Web 2.0 applications, and that's really, I think, what is behind Chrome. They're trying to cater to people who want to spend a lot of time with Web 2.0 applications. One of the best features about Chrome, at least in my opinion, I've downloaded it and played with it for a couple of days now, is that you can actually make a website an application. So let's say you go to a Web 2.0 application, and we're going to talk about a number of those today. Slide Rocket is an online presentation Web 2.0 application, all online, all in the cloud. But I can go to that site and click on a button and say make it an application. It creates a shortcut on my desktop or in my start menu, and then when I want to come back to that site, I just double click on that particular icon, and the application loads automatically, and it strips out all of the browser stuff that comes around it, and all you have is the minimize icon, the close icon, lets you have like you would have for any other application. So it gives all the appearances as a built-in application. So they're obviously catering to a Web 2.0 world where you're treating these in the cloud online applications as or websites as applications.
Boy, our world is changing around us, isn't it, Martin? That's a real shift for us and for our mentality to be able to use web applications like we're used to using a desktop application.
I would say it's faster, too. They've got a different rendering engine. It's based on the WebKit engine. which is faster. It renders JavaScript faster, so it's really optimized, again, for these Web 2.0 applications. So, and this is especially intriguing to me. It was launched while I was out at a conference in San Francisco called Office 2.0. And the point of that conference was very relevant to the, again, the Web 2.0 world, and that's asking the question, can a business especially live completely in the cloud? Can you conduct business essentially with all online applications? I was a little suspicious going into the conference. I felt that it was kind of important to ask and answer that question, especially as it relates to giving maybe advice to our congregations who are constantly beginning to ask, you know, can we do more and more of these? I hear about Google Apps and some of these other things that they can do in the cloud, online, email, et cetera, et cetera. So I guess I came away with the answer to the question of, you know, can we live completely in the cloud with a resounding almost. That's probably as close as we're going to get. There are definitely some things that we could do in the cloud almost exclusively, but there, for the church office especially, there are some things that, you know, maybe we're not quite there yet.
So I guess before we talk about areas where we can and we can't function in the cloud, I'm wondering if there's any benefits to doing this. You know, or, you know, how does that weigh in? What do we gain by taking our applications off our local computers and using them as a web-based application?
Well, you could start in a lot of different areas. I think one of them is the fact that you've got dedicated companies, in essence, that are able to get these things up pretty quickly and then continue to upgrade and up and maintain them at very low cost. I put out a blog post, was it back earlier this week, called In the Cloud. If you're not following our blog or my blog, you know, you may want to take a look at that. If you go to wells.net/imprint/technology, you'll see a blog post there called In the Cloud. And I'm just looking at it now just to kind of refresh my memory about, you know, what really are those positives. And I think another positive would be the fact that, you know, if you're using in the cloud or online applications, it really reduces the need to have kind of a beefy computer, to have something with a ton of memory, have a, you know, a ton of hard disk storage, have a very fast processor. The more things you do online, the less you will have a need for, you know, kind of these supercomputers to run all of the, chug through all of these desktop applications. So that would probably be a big one, and probably of interest to a lot of our churches, as, you know, hardware is a significant investment.
Absolutely, a huge chunk of money going toward hardware. The other one that I read from your post that I really liked was the fact that they're doing the upgrades for you automatically behind the scenes. Another huge chunk of money typically in your technology budget is going to go towards the software, and not just the initial purchase of the software that you want to use, but the continually upgraded versions of it. And if you don't upgrade, we no longer support it, and all those kind of things. Well, with this in the cloud computing, you're getting the upgrades automatically filtered into your work with the system. There's nothing that you buy to get to the next level. They just roll them into what you're working with, and so you're constantly being upgraded and keeping up with the latest technology.
Right. One last thing, probably on the positive side, and we'll talk a little bit about the negatives as well, one that could actually be in both is security. When people think about putting their stuff, their content in the cloud, whether it be email or documents or databases, they think, well, is it really safe? In many regards, it's probably safer in the hands of, you know, companies that do this professionally, and they have obviously contracts and legalese that apply to, you know, ownership and privacy and those kinds of things. It's probably safer in the cloud in many regards than it is sitting on systems that our congregations and churches are probably not all that savvy at protecting. as far as hackers getting into a network or just the physical security that a particular church may or may not have, or pastor's office, or roving laptops, those kinds of things. So being in the cloud offers some level of security for that data. So on the flip side, you have to obviously do your homework. When you're looking at some of these Web 2.0 companies, you have to make sure that they are a credible company that's been around for some time, and a lot of these companies have not because it's such a new technology. So you want to do your homework, listen to what other people are saying, make sure you read all of their privacy policies and their security statements so that you know what you're getting into and who owns the data and how they're going to protect it, you know, from those people who might want to get it. So it's important to keep those, you know, in mind as well. There are other negatives. Sally, do you see any as you look at kind of going in the cloud exclusively?
I guess the one thing that comes to mind for me is that all my data is sitting in their hands. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess that kind of ties back to security. But is there a need for me to have a backup of that personally? You mm-hmm. know, if something happened to their site or their servers or whatever, you know, I'm totally dependent on them to host all my data. So, you know, building into this, you know, some personal backup, at least of your most important files.
Yeah, and that's not always real easy with a Web 2.0 application. So I would make sure that gets filtered into your thinking about, you know, what vendor I'm going to choose to do this. If I can get this data out, if I can export this on a regular basis and store it on a DVD or on my local hard drive or on some other, you know, web space where I'm going to be confident that I've got a backup of it. Or if that company goes out of business, I can get my data out. It doesn't die with them. So that's obviously a negative and something you need to be concerned with. There are a couple others. Obviously, when you're dealing with in the cloud applications, you have to be able to get to the cloud, so you always need a connection. There are more and more applications that have offline modes where you can work in an offline fashion. Let's say you're on a plane or you're in a place where you don't have an internet connection, but not all of them do that. So that's a consideration. You need to have good internet access, stable, and typically broadband type of access. You know, dial-up is really not going to work in a Web 2.0 world. Some web apps are going to be a little bit slower, although I think that's going to really improve over time with technologies like Ajax and those kinds of things. And again, stability. You know, it's an immature industry, so you have to think about, you know, is this company going to be around? So do your homework. So that's kind of the positives and the negatives. So when I went into the conference, I had those on my mind, and there were a lot of panel discussions about those. One of the panel discussions was on the question of, you know, 100% SaaS. SaaS stands for Software as a Service. So the whole panel was discussing exactly what we just discussed, whether a company could go 100% all of their applications in the cloud. So essentially, they would have no need for internal servers, internal storage. They would just need good, solid network connections and reliable, you know, lightweight machines to get at it. So it raises a lot of questions. So what I thought I would do to kind of help our listeners and the Synod benefit from what I learned at that conference is I built a PowerPoint of sorts using a Web 2.0 tool called Slide Rocket. And we'll publish a link to this in the show notes. But essentially what I've done is I raised the question, and I call it Church Office 2.0, Church Office Computing in the Cloud. Is it possible? And if so, what would my recommendations be if a church office is considering going more into the cloud for a lot of their applications? So I took some of the major tools and the needs of a church office and tried to identify those tools that they might use in that kind of world. So let's go through that. Does that make sense, Sally?
You bet. This is the exciting part. I can't wait to hear what your recommendations are.
Okay, and again, I'm not the definitive expert. These are just based on my observations. Most of the things that I'm going to talk about, I have tried. Some of them I've tried extensively. Some of them I've just dabbled a little bit, and I'll let you know what those are as we go through. But I try to think of all the things that a church office would need. and how they could migrate to the cloud, as it were, into an Office 2.0 world. And the first thing that comes to mind is just plain and simple file storage. You're creating file, you're creating content. It's all different shapes and sizes. So it's Word documents, or word processing documents, or spreadsheets, or images, or whatever it is. So you need a place that's going to just store all that stuff, rather than your local file server or your local laptop or desktop. And one of the best things that's come along in a long time is from Amazon. It's called Amazon S3, and it's really just simple storage. It's raw storage at an affordable price. Amazon obviously has a huge infrastructure to support their online business and their books and all that they do. So they have just tons and tons of storage space, and they've decided to make that available to the masses at a fairly reasonable cost. So basically, you pay per gigabyte per storage for a month at a time. So you essentially upload your content to their servers, and the cost is 15 cents per gigabyte of storage per month. So you can do the math. If you've got if you've got a lot of gigs that you want to store on a regular basis, it's not going to cost you very much, and probably much less than what it costs you to buy a hard drive or a computer or a server to house all that data. There are a couple ways to it's kind of geeky, so you need some tools on the desktop end that'll let you access that. And the best one that I found is called Jungle Disk at jungledisk.com. By the way, the Amazon S3 product is available at AWS, and we'll include all these links in the show notes, aws.amazon.com/S3. You sign up for it. It's a pay-as-you-go. You just give them a credit card, and they bill you each month. Jungle Disk is a product, $20, so it's relatively inexpensive. I would recommend adding the $1 a month add-on for web-based access. But even if you just do the disk-based one, it's a simple program that you download, and it acts as a network share. So it builds a little drive, a network drive, on your desktop. It acts just like your C drive or your D drive or whatever else. You just drag files into it. You can drag all your files into it if you want, and they get uploaded to the Amazon S3 server, and they just live there. And they've got all kinds of backup and security procedures around that. All platforms are supported. So essentially, it becomes your network drive. So if you think of your network server, if you've got one in your church office, this becomes that, except it's hosted at Amazon, and you can access it just like you can your network server. It happens over a network connection. You can open files, edit files, everything that you could do on a network drive, the same as it were local. So I don't know if you've ever heard of that one, Sally. A lot of people have not. It's kind of, again, I say it's a little geeky, but it's a really good value for the money.
Yeah, I can see some definite advantages just to have a backup location, an off-site backup location. Even if you aren't ready to jump wholeheartedly into the Web 2.0 world, and you're still going to have your file server, this would be a way to have a backup of your file server.
Yeah, and the Jungle Disk application has a backup utility. You can either use it as a network drive or as a backup utility. So you just say, I want everything to stay in sync. So whenever you change a file locally, it'll upload it to the Amazon S3 server, and you've got this in the cloud backup at very low cost. So
very sweet.
Yep.
Yeah.
We've talked about other backup utilities too. Mozy is one, and those kinds of things. It works on a similar kind of concept, but this is just good old-fashioned raw space.
Excellent.
You'll see it on the slideshow, which I use Slide Rocket for. There are a couple other alternatives that I'd recommend. Zoho, and I'll talk more about Zoho later. Zoho Docs. Similar thing. And then there's a bunch of Web 2.0 type companies popping up that do essentially the same thing. xDrive, Box.net, and the latest one that I saw is called Dropbox, which looks very cool. They're in beta right now, but basically that's also file synchronization, so you can keep a file in sync regardless of all your computer, whatever computers you use. Works across platforms. So,
and what's the URL for that Dropbox?
GetDropbox.com.
Okay.
And join the beta. So give it a shot. There's a cool video in there that shows you how it does all its magic tricks. So that's the file server side. Let's move on to one that's probably really important for most church offices, and that's just the general office suite. Word processing, spreadsheet, presentations, databases, note-taking. The one that I would recommend hands down there is Zoho. Some would lean more toward Google Apps. I prefer Zoho because of just the range of products that they offer, and I think they do a better job, especially with their word processing product. Google Apps is an alternative, but the Google Apps word processor is very basic. You can't do pages. It's all one page in essence. Zoho, you can do page numbering. It acts a lot more like a regular word processor. All integrated, they do a nice job with their spreadsheet and with their presentation software. They have databases. They have all kinds of things. It's almost the kind of the Swiss Army knife of office tools. I believe they're well integrated. And they have some offline components too, which I think Google Doc does as well. Zoho Writer, as they call it, has an offline component, so you can work offline and then sync your changes once you're done. Good alternative is also Think Free Office at thinkfree.com. So if you're looking for a good all-purpose office suite online, Zoho is probably the way to go. Have you got any experience with any of those, Sally?
Actually, that's an area I have not jumped into, mm-hmm. as the online office suite. We just made the jump to OpenOffice in our church office so that we would have all the OpenOffice functionality with the free open source software locally. Mm-hmm. So, going online with it, that's not an area we've delved into yet.
Yep. I heard at the conference that there is a company that's taking OpenOffice online as well. Applying Ajax technology to it, and you can essentially use OpenOffice technology right in the cloud as well. Next area is presentations. And the hands down winner, as far as I'm concerned, is the one that I'm using for this PowerPoint, that if you go to the site, you can see how it works, and that's called Slide Rocket. It's in beta now, as a lot of these are. But I think if you just look at the presentation, you'll see that there are a lot of benefits to it. And in essence, it's PowerPoint in the cloud. You can do almost anything that you can do in PowerPoint. In fact, you can import PowerPoint slides. There are online and offline players, so you're not limited to having to have an internet connection to do your presentation. You have almost every tool that you could ever use with transitions, charts, video, audio, flash. Another cool feature is that you can automatically search Flickr for images and suck those into your presentation. And then, of course, you can share it like we're doing for this particular presentation, or it can be a private share as well with a password. Pricing is free, and there are some also alternatives to it. Impressor is one that was at the show that was I think, very innovative. They have a little bit better integration with some of the photo sharing sites and such. And then Google Docs and also Zoho, they all have presentation software as well.
One question for you here, Martin. Do they allow you to embed audio?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Audio, video, flash, tables. They have all kinds of plugins. These are evolving, so I think their suite of integrations will grow as their user base does. So, and that's, again, one of the benefits of going with something in the cloud, is that as the software gets updated, you get it immediately, for the same cost, if there is a cost. And in this case,
Very
there is
nice.
No cost. So,
I think with the presentation tools, adding that audio component is a really powerful feature, mm-hmm. so that if you are watching it online, you get what the discussion was going to be around the slides. So that's very exciting to see.
Yeah, maybe I'll play with that. Maybe we can grab audio from our little talk here, and I can attach that to the slide, see how that works. I have not played a lot with that yet. So
that would be cool.
All right. Next up, and this is probably not embedded into every office or church office, but We've talked about it a lot on the show, and we use it all the time, and that's mind mapping software. We've talked about Mind Manager before, and that's what Sally and I use to plan the show, to capture information about the show and our interviews and those sorts of things. And I think there's definitely application within the church office and definitely within the school. And by the way, when I'm talking about Church Office 2.0, I really do mean the church office. There are a number of other tools that schools could use, and we could maybe devote another show to School 2.0, because there's obviously just as many things out there for educational purposes, maybe even more at this point, because I think they've been kind of working in that space a little bit longer. But mind mapping, one that I'm kind of gravitating toward is MindMeister. A German company, of course. They've been around actually for a number of years already, but they've essentially taken the mind mapping process online. Now, the free version limits you, I think, to 7 maps. So if you're serious about it, you will probably want to purchase one of their plans. I think their base plan is $4 a month. There are academic versions available that are cheaper. Typically, all of these have nonprofit, charity, or academic pricing, so you may want to make sure you check that out before you purchase. And if you don't see it on their site, just ask them. And I found that almost all of them have some kind of charity pricing, and typically it's either free or very close to free. So it's worth the effort to try and find out. The MindMeister imports Mind Manager files and exports them as well, so you can get them out once you've got them in. Cool feature about this one is that you can send text messages or email items to a particular address, and it'll add them to a map. So if you don't have access to the software, but you can text something, or you've got access to email, you can get your stuff into a mind map and then organize it once it's up in the cloud. They also have gadgets and widgets depending on your platform, whether you're Mac or PC, where if you're just thinking of something, you can just throw it in that widget and it'll automatically upload it. Another cool feature about this, and this is what mind maps are really good at, is collaboration. So a number of people can be working on the same map at the same time, and it'll automatically pull all of them together and coordinate them and color code them. I thought that was one of the most powerful features of this, which is lacking in some of the desktop versions like the one we use, Sally, Mind Manager. Mm-hmm. And also sharing, and I mentioned the pricing already. So you mentioned one a while back, Sally. What was it called? MindDomo.
That's right. I saw that one demonstrated at the conference I attended, mm-hmm. and was quite impressed with it. What was so nice about it was the presenter was actually using it as the presentation mechanism.
Right.
We could bring up the mind map and click through the links that were embedded there as she was presenting. So really powerful tool to use as a presentation mechanism as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see this, you mentioned this is church office focused, but looking at what students need, at those 21st century skill sets that we want to teach our kids, I really rank mind mapping up there as one of the office suite of software, just mm-hmm. like word processing and spreadsheets and presentation skills. I think that giving them mind mapping skills allows them to take notes efficiently, to map out, presentations mm-hmm. or reports that they need to do or whatever. So mind mapping, I think, is just going to get a lot more attention. And, these kind of online tools will be awesome for that.
Totally agree. Then last but not least, email, sometimes an afterthought, but there are obviously online tools that will do your email. Email is kind of online already, but if you're going with a totally web-based client, the one that I would recommend would be Gmail. That's what I use for my personal email, and I think it's great. You have plenty of storage. I forget how many gigabytes it's up to now, 7 or 8 gigabytes of storage, which is hard to fill up even with gratuitous attachments. So you got plenty of storage, and they're automatically increasing that every day. Works really well. I like the model that they use. I don't know if you use Gmail, but the concept is they thread discussions so that when there's a conversation or back and forth with the same subject, it's compressed into one line of emails so that you can just click on it and see the whole thread, so that you don't have like 10 messages about the same topic. running up and down your inbox.
And I understand it also allows you to tag your messages. We spent some time in our last show talking about the power of tagging.
Yep.
And my email is totally, currently at least, tied to my directory structure, my folder structure for storing it.
Right.
And I have this massive amount of information in my brain that allows me to know where to look
yep.
for a particular email in a particular folder. And with Gmail, that's just not an issue, is
yeah.
it?
Nope, not at all. And as you would guess, their searching tool is just awesome. That's what Google specializes in. So it's really easy to find an email on a particular topic or thread of discussion just by entering a search term, and it'll pop it up. So I use that all the time. One negative about Gmail is their contact management, their contact list, I think is a little marginal. I think they could do a much better job there at doing that, and I think they have plans to do so. So just watch out for that. Again, Gmail is web-based primarily, but you can also use POP or IMAP to get at that email. That's something that they added later on after it did launch. So that's just something to keep in mind. And it's free. There are also alternatives to Gmail, of course. One of the ones that's been around for a long time is Hotmail. It's now called Windows Live Hotmail at hotmail.com. I think they've made some nice user interface improvements with Hotmail. So that's a possibility. And I've already mentioned Zoho before. They have a mail application at zoho.com, which looks pretty cool as well. Although I have not used it a lot. I have an account there and have played with it a little bit, but it looks very functional. So there are many, many alternatives on the email side. But Gmail would be the one that I would recommend first and foremost.
So the question remains, what's not in the cloud?
There are some, yeah, when I answered the question almost, here's the almost stuff. I think there are some applications that are conspicuous by their absence, and maybe you would understand why as we go through these. Three major areas, I think, are still not in the cloud, at least to the degree that I would recommend church offices saying I could go 100% there. One of them is desktop publishing. A lot of churches obviously need to put together the Sunday bulletin or a newsletter. And while Zoho Writer does allow you some formatting and you can put pictures in and those kinds of things, I still don't think you can do, you know, side-by-side kind of layouts where you're going to get real comfortable with it as a desktop publishing tool. I think these are coming, and some people have made stabs at them, and especially with Ajax and a lot of the JavaScript kinds of tools that are out there now. I think this is coming, but it's not there yet. So I think you're still going to have to stick with your Microsoft Publisher, or if you use the Adobe products, InDesign or Quark or whatever it is that you use, or even Word. You know, the local version of Word that you have is probably good enough to do that as well, which the online apps are not quite ready for prime time yet. So that's one area. The second one is church management software, and that's kind of a staple for churches today. While there are databases that you could probably make work, Zoho has a pretty good database, and there's a few others that work well. QuickBase is another one that you could probably make it work. The bona fide church management software vendors don't all have, or most of them don't have, online versions at this point. I think they're coming, but they're pretty slow. And the tool that we've been recommending to all of our congregations is Shepherd Staff from Concordia. They do not have an online version. It's all client-based, client-server-based. And congregations get a little queasy about putting that information online. I think that will change over time, but again, the software is just not there online. And then I think the last one, Sally, is financial management. Obviously, congregations need to keep the books and do accounting. And I think for online accounting or online bookkeeping, we're still a little bit away from where a congregation could feel totally comfortable doing that. You know, there is some promise in products like QuickBooks or QuickBooks Online. I think it's usable, but it's pretty new, so it's immature, so we're not sure what it truly can and can't do over the long haul. I know a lot of our congregations use QuickBooks, so if you do, you may want to look at QuickBooks Online, but I think in general, the cloud software that's available in that space is again, pretty immature and maybe not all that ready for your wholehearted use at this point.
But as you look into the future, Martin, you think that financial information, even eventually, will all be housed online. I mean, that's probably the most sensitive mm-hmm. of natured information. But yep. you see that coming down the pipe eventually.
I do. Wow. With security, the security that exists and the encryption that exists and the security that's going to exist in these in the cloud applications. Again, as I mentioned before, I think there's probably better safety in some of these online applications than there is locally, in a particular church office. So, again, that's a paradigm shift, and I think congregations are going to have to kind of wrap their minds around that. But
right.
I truly believe that's where it's going to go, and you almost have to think of these in-the-cloud applications, these Web 2.0 applications, as a server, you know, that would be no different than what's sitting within your infrastructure. And probably safer in the cloud than maybe in your back hall or underneath the pastor desk or wherever it is. And there's a lot of debate on that, and we'll have to see over the next few years whether that's going to happen. But that's where I see it going. I really do.
Cool.
So we shall see.
So I'm going to be making some notes in my mind maps to revisit in the cloud computing in a few months, and we'll see where things are headed just in a shorter period of time. I'm sure there'll be lots and lots of advances
mm-hmm.
here.
Well, because I was so long-winded, Sally, on Web 2.0, I think we will not have our interview. We have a number of them in the queue, which I think you'll really be interested in. We have an interview with Andy Thimer, who runs InWells. LinkedIn group. LinkedIn is one of those social networks that I think our listeners would be interested in hearing about. We also had a chance to talk with Pastor Mark Cares about his blogging experience through his Truth and Love ministry to Mormons especially. So we'll play that in the coming weeks as well. So stay tuned for some really solid interviews about different social in the cloud type applications, blogging and social networks that I think are having impacts on ministry. So let's jump to our picks of the week. Sally, you have a pick
okay.
this week. I assume you do.
I do. I actually want to introduce you to a friend of mine. And in the Web 2.0 world that we live, I can call Jane Hart, who's a e-learning professional in the UK, a friend, because we've communicated long distance via the web,
and you've never met her,
a regular
right?
fan of her websites. Mm-hmm. I found Jane because she does a blog, a daily blog called Jane's E-Learning Pick of the Day, and I found it to just really be a treasure chest. She comes up with the coolest applications and you know, gives you a little bit of a description of them as well. But what's cool about her websites is that she kind of takes on compiling and getting a real pulse of what applications are being used and how people are finding them to be useful. And in doing that, she invites e-learning professionals from all over the world to submit to her their favorite Web 2.0 type applications, and she compiles them. And when I include these links in the show notes, she'll be able to go and see the top 100 tools. She has the tools categorized in a lot of different ways. So just a real powerful website for looking for and gathering information about a particular tool. The thing that I really wanted to focus on today is her top 25 tools list. And Jane's put that together in an online slideshow. She uses a slideshow site called SlideShare.net, and you can actually just page through the top 25 and read some of the pluses and minuses for each of these things. And you'll find things like Mozilla Firefox and Skype and lots of the applications that you're probably already using. But I'm betting that if you look through her top 25 list, you're going to be intrigued by a few that you haven't heard of yet. So I encourage you to check out Jane's top 25 tools, and I'll put a link in the show notes.
Very good. It's the fact that people like Jane, who have expertise, can so easily get this information out, and that you, as an interested person in the same space, can communicate with her, across the pond, as it were, is just a wonderful new thing that was not possible even 5-6 years ago, because you would not have known about Jane. Maybe you would read something in a journal or something like that, but here it's so easy, and it's so easy for her to self-publish as well at very low cost, and the information that's shared is valuable.
That's right. It's a flat world that we live in.
Yep. My pick, I've already mentioned earlier on in the show with my Church Office 2.0 conversation, and that's the office suite called Zoho. The challenge, I think, for any one of these kind of office suite online tools is to provide or meet most, if not all, of the needs of a particular office so that you don't have to switch to multiple applications. So that's nicely integrated within the same system. And that's what Zoho does really well. So as I mentioned before, they have an online word processor, spreadsheet, application, presentation tool, document management, note taker. But they also have a whole bunch of other stuff, including mail, project management, an invoicing system, web conferencing even, online applications, online calendaring. Essentially anything that a business or a church office, let's say, would need to conduct business online. Zoho, in my opinion, kind of had a slow start, and I think that Google, because of their size and strength, you kind of overpowered or overshadowed them. But when you really look at all the things that are offered and how nicely they're integrated, I really prefer Zoho. And again, the price is the same, at least for, I think, most of the uses that our congregations would have. I think there's something there that would make a lot of sense for congregations to consider. There's also nice integration with Office products. So that it will read Word documents or export to them. There's an offline client for the writer function so that you don't always have to be online. Just worth a try, and it doesn't cost you anything to try it either. So I would encourage you to take a look at Zoho, that's Zoho.com. They've been around. They were probably one of the first ones in the cloud Web 2.0 office suite space, and they've only grown from there.
So, again, I mentioned earlier, not a space that I've been in at all. So I appreciate your recommendations. I don't have to wade through the others. I think I'll download Zoho today, or I'll go there and get an
account.
Don't have
to download it. That's right.
Okay. All right. I'm a little slow on this, but I'm going to give it a try.
Try and keep up, Sally.
Yeah.
All right. Our Wells.net feature of the week. What's up with that, Sally?
Martin, I wanted to point people to the Committee on Relief's blog. It's at relief.wells.net. I may have talked about this one once before on our show, but with all the latest hurricanes that have been happening out in the Gulf and on the Atlantic coast as well, our Committee on Relief is right there to assist. And it's just wonderful to see those firsthand accounts and be able to actually hear. They've got some podcast where they've talked with some of the pastors in the area about the various damage that happened, particularly with this most recent hurricane. And I'm losing the name of it, Gustav, I believe it was, that came up through Louisiana. And so you want some firsthand accounts of what's going on in the wells in relation to those storms and things. You're going to find that at relief.wells.net.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah, they do a tremendous job. And the ability to blog about this stuff and the video that we're able to post via streams and the audio files that can be submitted and played is just kind of added a nice dimension to help the contributors to those relief efforts get a better sense for what their money is going towards. So neat effort, and they just do a tremendous job. Kudos to everybody involved there, especially Pastor Phil Shipman. So.
Definitely. One of our friends is actually down in Alexandria, Louisiana, and they were flooded out of their home and church. So I was just happy to see their picture online and hear their voice and know that they were okay and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What would we like to help our listeners be aware of in the Wells world?
Well, coming up very soon, I believe it's on September 22nd and 23rd, is the Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary Symposium. This is an annual event held each fall at the seminary, and it brings together a lot of different people around a particular topic. This year's topic is the church, and there'll be three main essayists. It's Pastor Jonathan Hine from Somerville, South Carolina, and he's going to do an essay on the church and its members. And then you'll hear Professor Thomas Nass from MLC on the church and its ministry. And finally, Minnesota District President Pastor Charles Degner from St. Peter, Minnesota, is going to be presenting on the church and its ministers. So I'm sure there's a lot there that many pastors especially would benefit from being a part of, and I'm sure it's not too late to get in on the Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary Symposium, again on September 22nd and 23rd, and we'll put some links in our show notes to the information on the Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary website about the symposium.
Okay. I think we're ready for our community feedback section. Anybody talking to us this week, Sally?
Well, one in particular that I wanted to mention was from Jason Wignett, who's looking for those Wells members out there who use QuickBooks. Jason's looking for some direction on how to do audits if you're using QuickBooks for your financial system. So if there's any of our listeners that have particular expertise in QuickBooks, you're using it for your congregational's financing, then you need to respond to Jason, because he'd love to connect with you and get some more information on the audit process that you use.
And the way to do that, first of all, would be to go to our website and join that listserv if you're not already a member of it. Our website is wellstech.wells.net, and we have a whole host of opportunities for you to get involved and connect with us and with others. Go to that website to see all of those: email, voicemail, delicious tagging. We have a Facebook page, and as I mentioned, the Wells Tech listserv, great, great resource for anybody who has a technology question. We just got some really smart people out there who are ready and willing to assist. Well, that will about do it for this week's show, Sally. It was fun. I enjoy talking about Office 2.0. I think there are a lot of potentials there, and you're going to hear probably more about that as we move forward, as well as all the other host of technology topics. If you'd like to hear something talked about on our show and we're not addressing it, let us know. We will talk about it. So thank you again for listening. Let's close the show with the music of In His Service with their song, O God, Your Hand the Heavens Made, from their album In His Time. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.